It's Sunday, the 17th of April, 2016. Happy birthday to CJ Watson and Cleanthony Early. Show brought to you by Loot Crate and WNE 1950. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be like WNE 1950 and sponsor the podcast for a day, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can become that sponsor. Thank you to WNE 1950, and I sincerely hope that the 1950 in your name is your year of birth, because I reckon that would make you the oldest listener to the Red Rock Basketball Monster Show. So I'm gonna take it as that, and congratulations for winning that feat. You can follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball. And if you're watching along the show live on YouTube, which you can do for every episode, tweet at me any questions, comments, thoughts that you may have after watching the first day of the NBA playoffs. We're going to be looking back briefly on what happened on Saturday. We're going to be previewing Sunday's action to help set your DFS lineup. So
let's get to it.
I sure will. Now, we're not going to do all of the nightly awards and have a big run through of all the box scores in the playoffs, but still going to do a monstrous line of the night, and that goes to Paul George of the Indiana Pacers. The Pacers get the upset victory over the Raptors. George went 33-4-6. He had 4 triples, 4 steals, and 2 blocks, and tremendous percentages, which is not something that he's been well known for throughout the regular season. You know, he shot 55% from the field in this one, and was below 45% on the season. So that's a huge night from George, and they're going to need huge nights from him to win this series. It's a big, big win. I know Raptors fans will be disappointed. They'll be nervous, I think, is probably the major thing to say for Raptors fans. You know, that the choking talk comes back. Let's hope it doesn't affect the players. I know that it's going to affect the fans, and there's going to be other fans throwing that out there the whole time. If I'm a Raptors fan, I'm not concerned about it at this point. Yes, it was a victory. Yes, it was game one. They obviously need to win game two. If they didn't, then I'd be a little bit concerned. But I still think they're going to get the series pretty comfortably. But a big game from the Pacers, in particular, Paul George. Let's look at the perfect DFS lineup from Saturday's games. Playoffs are a bit of a harder animal. The scores are generally lower for a perfect lineup just because there's not as many bargain plays out there. So as you'll see when we go through this lineup, there's one of them in particular that doesn't really look like a great option, but it was the best in terms of salary manipulation and use. At point guard, Isaiah Thomas 43.6 and Jeff Teague 45.8. Big games from both those guys dueling against each other, which was probably, definitely the best game of the night, the Hawks and the Celtics. Big games from both those guys, and you'd imagine they're going to have to continue to have big games throughout the series. At shooting guard, Monte Ellis put up 31.1. I'm not really convinced of him being a great DFS option moving forward, but that's a big night. And Ellis's teammate came in as the other shooting guard, and that is Solomon Hill. He put up a paltry 15.4 points, which is obviously horrible, but with the other options that were out there, in terms of best use of the salary, he gets the nod. And that's the weird thing about playoff DFS, is some sort of crap performance like that can actually fit into a lineup and work. Because it would have allowed you to put guys like Paul George in, who had 54.8. Now, Kent Bazemore had 38.6 as the two small forwards. I really did like Bazemore in this matchup. George, yeah, he was at a decent price. I did like KD more, but the Mavericks won by about a million points, so he didn't have to play that often, so that sort of ruined that one. Power forwards, Draymond Green had 41 points, and Serge Ibaka had 35.8 in a pretty encouraging performance from him. And at center, Jonas Valanciunas grabbed a massive amount of rebounds. That translated into 36.8 FanDuel points. I think he's going to have a key role throughout this series. The total of that lineup would have given you 342.9. So during the regular season, you saw plenty of nights when we were at 440, 420. This lineup gave you 345. And I think that playoff DFS lineups are going to be, in general, just a lower amount, because the stars are going to get more of the minutes and they're going to cost more of the cash. So those opportunities to get those lower price guys in there are going to be few and far between. All right, today's sponsor of the podcast is Loot Crate, as I mentioned. And if you don't know what Loot Crate is, it's a monthly subscription box service. It's for epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear. It's less than $20 a month, and each month you get 6 to 8 items, including licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, and unique one-of-a-kind items. Every month there's a different theme that Loot Crate runs. This month they're running Quest as their theme. So items from Harry Potter, Labyrinth, Uncharted 4, and the History Channel's Vikings will be stuff that's included in this box for the month. You get your t-shirts, there's pins in there as well. So make sure if you're interested in this sort of stuff, head across to lootcrate.com/redrock. That's our unique URL to show that the guys at Loot Crate that you're coming from this website. And even if you're not interested in it, and even if you are, hey, maybe you're going to buy it, maybe you're not, use that, just browse that website. Go to lootcrate.com/redrock to show people that you are listening to this podcast and you're supporting the show. And then if you're going to buy it for yourself or for someone else as a gift, there's a coupon code you can use, which is also redrock, one word, and you save $3 on any new subscription. So head across and check out that website and check out what Loot Crate's got to offer, because I'm sure there's plenty of you people listening to this podcast will be into that sort of stuff like I am myself. Go across, check it out, and instead of going and sourcing all this stuff yourself, Loot Crate does it for you, and you get a great collection of things. So make sure you're checking out lootcrate.com/redrock. All right, I'm going to have a quick run through these box scores now. Again, we don't need to go into a massive amount of detail because we're not talking about pickups and waiver wire ads and stuff like that. The Pacers and Raptors was the first game. And probably the more interesting thing to me here, Yamahimi played only 17 minutes. That was foul trouble induced, so don't think that he's going to be limited in that degree. That's going to reduce the amount of playing time that Solomon Hill gets, I think, moving forward. He played 26 in this match. I don't imagine he continues to get that sort of run if Mahimi plays his 27 to 28 minutes or 30 minutes a night. Miles Turner still got his 26 off the bench. He went 10 and 5 with 5 blocks. A much better performance than what we've seen from him down the stretch. But again, I imagine if Mahinmi plays more, then Turner won't be relied upon quite so much as he was in this one. Hill was impressive, 13 points and 2 rebounds, and he's been really good down the stretch and playing some pretty big minutes. So maybe, like, I think he'll be a decent part of their rotation, just not a 26-minute part of their rotation. CJ Miles, only that 19 minutes. Not much else to really like here. Monte Ellis was good. George Hill struggled, as he's done for basically the last 3 months of the season, maybe 4 months of the season, in a fantasy statistical point of view. For the Raptors, Valanciunas grabbed 19 boards. He also shot horribly, which he won't do all that often. Went 4 of 14, still gave him 12 points and 19 rebounds, and he fouled out in 21 minutes. So it wasn't a platoon case there with the minutes. It was just a foul problem that limited his playing time. That gave Bismack Biyombo 24 minutes, but those numbers should be flipped and an extra 5 or so added onto Valanciunas, I would hope. Corey Joseph led the team for the Raptors. He had 18 points. DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry both struggled immensely with their shot, shooting sub 30%. And Norman Powell got another start, but didn't do a huge amount. He only played 17 minutes. Damari Carroll played 19. And I think we're going to see those minutes just keep switching and switching as Carroll keeps going up and Powell probably keeps going down. They basically used all the players that we thought they would. Terrence Ross got 14 minutes as well. I reckon if Powell is on and playing a bit better, then Ross's minutes might be reduced, but then they're going to be hard to rely upon moving forward. The Rockets and the Warriors, as expected, the Warriors smashed the Rockets. Steph Curry left the game. He only played 20 minutes in the third quarter. He was still the leading scorer in the game. He went 24-7-2 with 5 triples and 3 steals, and he's listed as questionable for the next game with an ankle injury. He seems to be pretty confident that he'll play. But with the Warriors having this series, I reckon, pretty much under control, he might have to sit out a game. James Harden struggled. He didn't even take one free throw attempt, which is very un-James Harden-like. And not much really was all that exciting, except for Dwight Howard got actually 10 shots, the first time in double-digit shots he's had for a while. They made a change to their starting lineup and put Corey Brewer in there in place of Donatas Motiejunas. Brewer wasn't great. He did have 6 assists, but that's completely unreliable. Motiejunas, 12 minutes off the bench, and Clint Capella still got 18 minutes, going 12 rebounds, a steal, and a block. And I still like Capella in that 20-minute role for DFS at that low salary. He's going to have nights where he gets 2 or 3 blocks and grabs 10 rebounds and gets a couple of steals and returns value for your money at that point. Josh Smith, surprisingly, in the rotation, played 8 minutes, and KJ McDaniels got 20 as well. That power four position is obviously a concern. McDaniels, Motiejunas, and Brewer running through there for most of the night. Can't see McDaniels getting 20 minutes all that often. Probably the key thing to me is Michael Beasley only played 6 minutes. I don't think that Beasley's going to have really much of an impact. The Warriors, it was basically business as usual. Not much to really report from them as well. The game was in hand pretty early. Boston and Atlanta, this was the best match of the night, comfortably. The Celtics were horrible in the first half, came back late and got the lead, and the Hawks took back over and ended up with the victory. Avery Bradley suffered a hamstring issue. I would be stunned if we see him in the next week. He reckons he's playing in the next game. I would say he's got zero chance of playing in the next game. He claims he heard a pop in his hamstring, and if you hear a pop in your hamstring, you're not coming back 2 days later. To transition this to Australian football, player from my team, the Bulldogs, suffered a hamstring issue last night. He's out for 4 months. Now, I don't imagine Bradley is going to be out for 4 months. That was a severe injury that Jason Johannesson suffered last night, like a complete tear through the hamstring. But you don't come back in 2 days from a hamstring issue. And even if it's not right, you can't play. And if anyone watched the Dallas OKC match and watched JJ Barea try and get around the court with an issue with his groin, he really, really struggled. And if you got bung wheels, like, what are you going to do? You're not going to get out there and be able to play. So Bradley, it'd be an issue, but they can put Terry Rozier in there, play some more Evan Turner as well. And it's obviously nowhere near the level of what Bradley brings, but a half-assed, one-legged Avery Bradley is not going to help all that much either. Evan Turner was good. The big man rotation still a concern. Jared Sullinger was terrible. Amir Johnson struggled. Kelly Olynyk barely played. Did have a shoulder problem, but he was available to return, but didn't. They just need to run Olynyk out there more. He's better than Sullinger. He's better than Johnson. He's the best big man on this team. He needs to play more, and he needs to provide that extra portion of offense and spacing. And we haven't seen that so far, unfortunately. He really needs to get out there and play more. And he could be, as dumb as it sounds, he could be a real difference maker. Also good to see Marcus Smart putting in a massive performance. 15-5-2 with 2 steals and 3 triples. On the Hawks, Paul Millsap's great. Al Horford's great. Jeff Teague was awesome. And Kent Bazemore was really good as well. So their core four guys put up big numbers. Mike Scott, really good off the bench. 14-5. And Kyle Korver is done. Amazing that Kyle Korver and Danny Green, two of the best three-point shooters from last season, are absolutely horrific this season. Just, how does it happen? How does Kyle Korver and Danny Green both just not know how to shoot? I know Korver had an injury issue. Green, I've got no idea what's happening there. A very, very weird situation. Tim Hardaway only played the 8 minutes, and Dennis Schroeder only played 11 minutes. Unlikely to see those two guys having much of an impact in this series. The last game of the night was Dallas and OKC, and this was a joke. There's not much point really going through this. Dirk was the only player for the Mavericks to get in double digits. They were up by 42 at the end of the third quarter, the Thunder. Salah Mejri got the start over Zaza Pachulia. Pachulia ended up playing more. Neither of those guys are going to be massive DFS factors, I wouldn't have thought, because they're going to continue to go back and forward in what they're able to do. JJ Barea, as I mentioned, only played 16 minutes due to his injury and due to really being bad as well. Darren Williams was bad. Just a complete mess. This is how bad it was. Dwight Powell played 20 minutes. For the Thunder, Serge Ibaka, 17-9 with 3 threes and 3 blocks. Great performance there. Westbrook and Durant were efficient. And unsurprisingly, Enes Kanter got a double-double off the bench. But like the Mavericks side of things, the minutes were spread all over the place. Josh Eustace played 8 minutes and Nazir Muhammad played 4 minutes. So there is that is your headline for this game. Nazir Muhammad plays 4 minutes in NBA playoff game. All right, that's it. Again, not going to go too much into detail in the box scores for the games, because again, we're not doing waiver wire pickups, but it's just an idea to get who's playing well and who's part of the rotation. But don't read too much into that Dallas OKC game, because it was a smashing. Yeah, basically from the word go, from the opening minute, it was all over. Now, where are we? Danny Triella has a question. He says, in history, whoever wins game one has 77% chance of winning the series. So I'm calling Detroit in seven. Interesting. Who wins? He says, my question is, who wins Miami and Charlotte? Well, Danny, if you're listening the other day to the podcast with myself and Matt, I picked the Charlotte Hornets in seven games. Nothing has changed in my thought process there. I do think that Charlotte gets the victory. That 77% chance thing is interesting, so it gives obviously the Pacers fans a lot of hope, but I'm not really thinking that they're going to get the victory. It'd probably go longer than the 5 games that I anticipated, but I would still go Raptors in 6 or 7. Detroit's definitely going to get a game off Cleveland. I'm not sure they're going to win in 7. That feels like a pretty ballsy call, Danny. But I guess we'll wait and see. All right, let's talk about these games that are going to be going on Sunday. The first one of those is the Detroit Pistons and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Let's look at the point guards. I really like Reggie Jackson here. He is right to go with that abdominal issue. He's at only 6,500. His last 3 games against the Cavs, he's given you 34.5 points per game. His last 3 games in real life is giving you 39 points per game. I think he's almost a lock for 35 here. A great matchup against Kyrie. Love Reggie Jackson here. Kyrie at 7,500 is not horrible, but the Pistons have been quite good at defending opposition point guards. Kyrie's been good lately, averaging 37 across his last 5. But if I'm taking between Irving and Jackson, I'm spending $1,000 less on Jackson, unless I've just got a spare $1,000 left in my budget at the end of the day. And I can get 4 extra points for that $1,000. It's not great value, but maybe I'm able to do that. Matthew Dellavedova, Steve Blake, Spencer Dinwiddie, unlikely those guys have any sort of an impact. Shooting guards, I really like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope here as a mid-price shooting guard. His 3 games against the Cavs, the last 3, he's yielded 27 points per game. Yes, the Cavs have got Iman Shumpert on there, which is a concern for him, but there aren't many great shooting guard options available for Sunday, so Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is one of the better guys to get out there, I think. J.R. Smith, I know we like him for a tournament. His last game that he played, he had 2 points. In the last 5, he's had a game of 39 points. So that just shows you there's no reliability for JR for cash games. For GPPs, it's awesome at 4,600. Iman Shumpert's going to have 1 in every 30 games be good. So being able to predict that is a tough one. And Jody Meeks actually made his return to action in the last game for the Pistons. Don't think he has much of an impact here. The small forwards, obviously LeBron James is leading the way. He's at 10,500. I think that he's got a 50-pointer in him here. It could be playoff LeBron really taking it to the next level. I'd like him, and again, if you need to spend up some money, he's the guy to go for there. Marcus Morris at 5,800. He's really struggled against the Cavs this season. He's actually struggled over his last 5, averaging just 21 points. He's a little bit up and down, but even his peak is not that high at the moment. Not a massive fan. Stan Johnson barely will see minutes. Same with Richard Jefferson or James Jones. Let's look now towards the power forwards. Kevin Love at 7,100. The Pistons were really tough to play against for power forwards early in the season. That is completely switched around. Power forwards can do some good things against them. Love is averaging 36 the last 3 times that he's played against the Pistons. For as bad as we think Kevin Love is, he's still a relatively good... That's a bad sentence. He's still a relatively productive player. That's better. And at 7,100, I think he comes in right at that 5x sort of value. So I do think he's a good option. Tristan Thompson's also in play. He has come down $500 in salary down to $5,000. He's going to be the starting center moving forward. He'll have some bad games, no doubt. And against Andre Drummond, he's going to get out-muscled and out-bullied. But at $5,000, he doesn't need to do much to really get to that value. So I think that he's an option. Toby Harris at $6,700 just feels a little bit too high. At $6,000, I'm all over Toby. At $6,700, I'm not sure I enjoy that. But he'll enjoy the playoff game, the playoff atmosphere. At center, Andre Drummond at $8,000. The Cavs have been one of the worst teams to play against for centers. So Drummond is a concern, but the 3 times he has played Cleveland this year, he's been at 43 points, which is well above what he's done in other matchups. So in terms of the Cavs being good reducing center production, yes, that's true, but Drummond's been one of those guys they've had trouble handling. And the pick and roll with him and Reggie Jackson, I think, works really well. And a GPP stack of Jackson and Drummond, because if one guy goes off, I reckon the other guy's going to go off. I think that works out really well. So I do like Drummond here. Aaron Baines is always in play if you think Drummond's going to get hacked and have to sit. He's at minimum salary. He's not a terrible guy to look at in a tournament. Tim Mozgov, minimum salary. We know that he's been really, really poor for most of the season. The next game is the Charlotte Hornets and the Miami Heat. The Heat are favored by 4.5, and the total is 200.5 points. Not a massive over-under there. Let's look at the point guards. Goran Dragic is at 7,000. You reckon he's okay. He's not awesome at that price. I think he comes in at probably about 30, 32 points that mark, which is a bit under 5x value, which is not ideal. But the Hornets have been pretty... flexible in allowing opposition point guard to put up numbers. So he's in play there. He hasn't played well against Charlotte this season, though, so there is a concern. His opposition, Kemba Walker, is at 8,300. The Heat, really good against point guards. And Kemba is at 39 points the last 3 times he's played them. He's been a little bit down in his form, but the minutes have also been reduced as they've been limiting what he's been doing. I think that either of these guys are worthwhile. And again, if you're looking to save money, you just take Dragic. But I think they're both going to be sort of similar value in relativity to each other. Let's look at... Oh, I don't need to look at Bronte Weber and Aaron Harrison. Let's look at the shooting guards. Dwayne Wade's at 7,500. I don't think he's a great play, but there is literally no one else in that high-priced shooting guard bracket for Sunday's game. So if you've got some cash left over and you don't like what you got at shooting guard, Dwayne Wade's going to give you 30-plus, which might be enough. We saw that some small numbers fitted into an optimal lineup today, so that got them some extra salary there. He might not need to get that extra 5, 6x value to really be useful. Joshy Richardson's at 4,300. He has been struggling lately. Wouldn't be using him first playoff game out at 4,300. Courtney Lee at 4,000. He requires an injury for him to get going. Same with Jeremy Lin's at 4,400. Lin's salary has dropped by 600 because Nick Batum will be playing. So I think he's going to find it hard to get to that 25-point mark. Let's look at the small forwards and let's talk Nick Batum, who will be back here. He's at 7,000. He's three games against the Heat this season. He's averaged 38 points, which is obviously great. He hasn't been the same guy lately. He's only averaging 26 minutes a game over his last five, though. So I'm not overly concerned. I think that he can approach 35 points here. He's an okay option, but the Heat are quite good defensively against small forwards. So I'm not sure that... I'm massively into him. I do like the two Heat small forwards here. Justice Winslow's at minimum salary. Again, he could be that guy like a Solomon Hill who goes and puts up 18 points at 3,500 and enables you to save some money for some other positions. And Joe Johnson at 5,000. You know, playoff Joe Johnson, he does excel in the playoffs. He'll get a couple of extra minutes. I think that he's a massive chance just to get that 25 to 28 points and be really useful here. Let's look at the power forwards. Not much to love here, to be honest. Marvin Williams at 5,600 is worth a look. He's averaged almost 28.5 over the last three against Miami. He has struggled a little bit of late, but this could be an opportunity for him. But also remember, the Heat have been pretty good defending power forwards lately. Luol Deng at 6,300 just doesn't feel like he's going to approach 30 points. I'm not a massive fan. Frank Kaminsky at 3,700. He's been good this year. He's averaging 21 points over his last five. He's a tournament punt. Amari Stoudemire, not really worth a look. At center, I like Cody Zeller if you're looking for a cheap center. He's at 4,600. He's been really limited lately, though. He's only averaging 17 minutes a game over the last three, but that's sternum issue and some resting issues in there as well. So not too focused on that. Hassan Whiteside at 8,700. I think he's a really good guy to have a look at now. He has struggled against the Hornets this season, but I think that in his first playoff action, I think that we see, yeah, it should be able to see a 40-point game from Whiteside at least. Al Jefferson's been playing really well lately from a DFS point of view. He's averaging over 30 points in his last five games. He's at 5,700. He's a little bit risky to me, but I'm okay with using him and throwing him out there in tournaments and seeing how it works. The next game is beyond ugly. It is the Memphis Grizzlies and the San Antonio Spurs. The Spurs are favored by 15.5. The total is 190. There is not a lot to really love here. Don't mind Tone Parker at 5,000. It's not a big salary at all. His last three against Memphis have given you 27 minutes a game. I think that Parker gets to that 25-point mark and is pretty happy with it. Patty Mills at minimum salary. He's always worth throwing in when there's a blowout on the cards. Xavier Munford at minimum salary as well. Well, he averaged 22 points over his last three. He outplayed Jordan Farmer in those last two games. Does he get to 25 to 26 minutes? If he does at minimum salary, I reckon he's definitely an option. Farmer, on the other hand, well, if he's lost out to Munford in terms of playing time, then he's not going to be an option. At shooting guard, Danny Green was always a tournament play. He's nothing more than that at 3,800. But I do like Manu Ginobili at 3,800. That's not a big salary. Can you think that Manu can get 20 points? I'm pretty confident that he can get 20 points against this team. Lance Stephenson's salary has dropped by 700 down to 4,800. He's going to have to be a big part of it, and Dave Yeager's come out saying he's the X factor in this series. Not really sure what that means. Maybe it means they lose by 15 instead of 20. I'm not really sure, but 4,800 for Lance is definitely a much more appealing salary. That means he needs to get to 25 points. I'm still not sure he can do it, but he is worth considering. And Tony Allen at 4,900, he is very much an up and down sort of tournament only option. At small forward, I do like Kawhi here. He's at 8,900. His last three games have given us 42.5 points per contest. At 8,900, I'm pretty confident we're going to get to 40 points with Kawhi, and a big opportunity for him to go over. Matty Barnes at 6,000. He's going to have to do a bit for this team to be competitive, but at 6,000 with Kawhi on him, that's not the spot I want to use him. And I don't hate Vince Carter at minimum salary. Just another one of those minimum salary guys that might get you 17 points, might get you 20 points, and that might be enough to help build a lineup. Kyle Anderson as well is worth looking at to me. He's dropped down to minimum salary again. Pop has said that he is going to continue to play him in the rotation. Nothing's going to change there. He's played him all season. Pop's quote, I think, was, "I've played him all season. Why would I change that now?" That could be Pop talking shit, but I think Anderson's going to be in the rotation. He's going to play sort of 15 to 18 minutes a night. And at minimum salary, he could have a night where he goes off in a, well, not goes off, but has a decent production. He is averaging 22 points across his last five games. And the last couple of times, or the last three times he's played the Grizzlies, he's averaged 19.5 points. So he is someone that is a consideration in a tournament. At power forward, LaMarcus Aldridge at 8,200. He has smashed the Grizzlies so far this season, averaging over 46 points. I think that he is definitely a 40-point guy to look at here. I love using him. Dave West at 4,300 and Boris Diaw at 3,500. Both those guys have got really tasty matchups, but it all comes down to how many minutes they get. Diaw's still working his way back from injury, so if I'm punting on any of them, it's going to be Dave West. Zach Randolph at 7,300, horrible matchup for him. He's averaging 34 against the Spurs this season. He's in play at 7,300. I think you have to consider him, but there are 900 more. I would take LaMarcus Aldridge any day of the week. Jermichael Green has gone back down to 4,600 in his salary. The matchup's terrible. At least did he get back over 20 minutes in his last couple of games. I think he's someone you look at, but not for too long. At center, Tim Duncan at 5,500. I actually don't mind Duncan here. I think he's worth a look at 5,500 to get you 26 or 28 points. The last three times he's played the Grizzlies, he's averaged 34 points. So I think that he's definitely worth a look. Chris Anderson, probably not. The last game of the night, the Portland Trailblazers and the Los Angeles Clippers. That's the only real injury sort of questionable one at the moment is JJ Redick in this one. He's questionable with that heel issue. Let's look at the point guards. It's Chris Paul versus Dame Lillard. Chris Paul's $1,000 more at 9,500. I really like Chris Paul at 9,500. Dame Lillard's defense is not great. Chris Paul's is. So I think that Paul is in place for a 45 to 50 point game. Lillard has been a little bit up and down. He's definitely worth a tournament look at 8,500. I do really like him in that sense, but for a cash game, I don't put any trust in what Lillard's able to do. And I think Paul has had a bit of rest. He hasn't played in the last 4 days. He can come out and really set the tone here. Austin Rivers only really gets an opportunity if someone is out at shooting guard. Well, again, it's Redick here. He's at 4,500. Love him at 4,500 if he's going to play, but we don't know that yet. If he is out, Jamal Crawford is down to 4,300. He would be the guy that would be in every one of my lineups if Redick happened to be out. At 4,300, he's averaging 31 points over his last five games as is. He would go close to playing 30 minutes a night, and he would be he'd definitely be someone I'd be getting into every lineup. Gerald Henderson, Alan Crabb for Portland, both minimum salary guys. Can one of them get to 20 points? I'd put more faith in Henderson, but it's a pretty low percentage. CJ McCollum's at 7,400. The Clippers have been just awesome in defending shooting guards all season. McCollum is only averaging 31 across his last three. At 7,400, I'm not all that keen on using him. Let's look at the small forwards. Al-Farouq Aminu at 5,400, a great punt option, but not much more than that. He's averaging 26 across his last three games, and at 5,400, that's pretty good. He's also had a 49-point game in his last five, but that brings his five-game average to 24. So he's very much up and down, hard to rely on in cash. Jeff Green at 3,800, that salary's dropped significantly. We don't know how he's going to be a part of the rotation. Griffin's obviously going to get his 30 minutes, and if Redick plays, he's going to have to split minutes with Paul Pierce and Luke Marmute, so I'm not sure that he's a great option. Same with Pierce, same with Johnson, same with Marmute. Mo Harkless at 5,500, he's going to be really overmatched against Blake Griffin, so that concerns me for his value, so I'm not really all that keen on using him. Speaking of Blake Griffin, he was the playoffs' best player last season. He's at 9,100, though that salary's risen by 1,400. There is very little chance I'm using him at 9,400. Really tough to do. I like Ed Davis at 4,000 if you're looking for a cheapie. He's averaged 29 points against the Clippers this season in his three games. $4,000 is not much, and you get 20, 25 points out of that, I reckon you'd be pretty happy. Noel Vonleh, Jeff Ayers, they're not going to have any impact at all. At center, DeAndre Jordan, I love Jordan here. He's at 7,800. He's averaged 42 the last three times against the Clippers. He should be looking for a 40-plus game here. And Mason Plumlee at 5,600 has been really good as well. He's averaging 28 against the Clippers. He's averaging 33 in his last three games. He's playing more minutes. He's looking more productive. And I think they're going to have to get him out there as much as possible because, you know, obviously Myers Leonard isn't there. Noel Vonleh is not going to be able to play. Cliff Alexander's not going to do anything. They're going to have to give Plumlee close to 30 minutes on a lot of these nights. My boy Cole Aldrich, you know I love him. He's averaging 31 points across his last five games in just 21 minutes per game. But I think he's going to find it tough to get even close to 21 minutes here. But if there's someone you want to punt on at 3,500 and think maybe it's going to be a blowout and Aldrich gets 20 minutes, then absolutely, at minimum salary, he's going to turn in some pretty nice nights. Let's look at the DFS picks of the day now for Sunday. Tone Parker at 5,000 at point guard, Reggie Jackson 65, and Chris Paul 9,500. Shooting guards, Manu Ginobili 3,800, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope 52, and Dwayne Wade 75. Small forwards, Justice Winslow 35, Joe Johnson 5,000, and LeBron James 10,500. Power forwards, Eddie Davis 4,000, Marv Williams 56, and LaMarcus Aldridge 82. And at center, Cody Zeller 46, Mason Plumlee 56, and DeAndre Jordan 7,800. We are done today, guys. Hopefully your team won in the playoffs. Hopefully your DFS line came through for you big. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter and to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or on YouTube and leave a review and a thumbs up and all that sort of great stuff. And to visit our sponsor, Loot Crate, at lootcrate.com/redrock. We are done today, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.